All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, April 28th, 2018. Pleased to be joined in studio, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Steve Goldman. How are you doing, bud?
Anthony, always a pleasure to be here on this beautiful spring day. You want to call it that?
Sure, why not? I mean, I'm not
technically
sure.
Technically, it is spring.
Technically,
right?
It is spring. Yeah. You're right. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's 40 or 50 and
or
it's
foggy,
raining,
out. You can't see. You can't even see, you know, 5 feet in front of you.
And but, miserable.
Yeah.
And, like, I was genuinely, like, driving slow on the roads today.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
cautious.
Because
I mean,
you can't...
not cautious with my life. I was cautious with your life.
Yes, well, I appreciate that because it was very generous of you to do that. I know you don't usually go out of your way to protect me, but that was but that was nice of you. I certainly did appreciate that on the ride over. So
we got a lot of
stuff to talk about today.
Oh my God, we got local star Annie Park.
Oh man,
making her way. How's she doing?
Park shot a 66 yesterday at the Mediheal Championship. That's the LPGA's stop. They're in Northern California, Merced.
Yep.
Former Long Island standout and friend of the program.
Friend of the program.
She's one behind Jessica Korda, who's like, what, 15, 16? What is she like? I don't know, 20?
She's still in middle school, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And she's just winning every tournament there. So Jessica Korda's got a one-shot lead on Annie Park. Charlie Hull is one behind her. And perhaps you've heard of Lydia Ko. She's another shot back.
She's not bad. She's not bad.
No, she's okay, too. She's all right. So. But yeah, Annie's been, what would you say, struggling since she's turned professional?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, let's just say in her particular journey hasn't been a particularly easy one.
No.
You know, and some are able to make that transition a little quicker than others, and some get there via, you know, the Symetra Tour.
And how about this, going through Monday qualifying to, you know, being one shot out of the lead after 36 holes. That's
I love Monday qualifier stories.
It's a great story.
It's a great story.
Because, I mean, you know, on these types of tours, you know, the LPGA Tour, the PGA Tour, let's say the Web.com Tour, you know, you win an event at these, it changes your life.
Changes your life. Exactly. And it's just the idea of grinding to get into the tournament. I mean, nobody's grinding to get into the NFL, like, you know, to play week 16.
Sure.
Or 15 or whatever.
Right.
Like, she's grinding to make a living. She has to show up to even qualify to make a living for the rest of the week. And that's even if she makes a cut. So, just tremendous story. Great girl. She's been, like you said, she's been on the program. Very sweet. Looking forward to our guest today.
Oh yes,
looking forward to talking to Frank Rossi. This is turf grass with a Bronx tail.
Oh, I love it.
I love it.
Very
it's,
nice.
From everywhere, from the Bronx to the Olympics, he's had a part in a lot of different things. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. There's obviously some political things happening and some bills trying to be passed. So be a tremendous conversation.
Also a friend of the program.
Friend
as
of
well.
The program. We need a sound effect for that.
Yes, that's true. We do need to come up with something like that because the dead air afterwards. You're right. We do need something. But yes, there's legislation being proposed on Long Island, and I'm sure all the Long Island golf superintendents out there are very sort of eager to hear Frank's commentary, not only about that, but also, as we spoke about before, the wonderful spring weather that we've been having, and I can imagine it's had a tremendous effect on the golf courses here on Long Island.
Absolutely. So with that, let's take our first break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorcher.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorcher. I'm Anthony, he's Steve. And on the line is PhD professor of Cornell University, Frank Rossi. Frank, thank you for joining the program once again.
Thank you, Anthony. Happy to get the invitation.
How are you doing these days? It's been a little bit crazy for you, but I want to first congratulate you on your President's Award from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America for your stewardship for your exceptional environmental contributions to the game of golf, a contribution that further exemplifies the Golf Course Superintendent's image as a steward of the land. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you very much, Anthony. That was a much unexpected award when you've spent most of your career aggravating people that you work with. You wonder if they don't give you an award to go away sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's like you said, a tremendous honor, and I know you've been very busy with, and I want to get right to this important legislation that's trying to be passed on Long Island, Nassau, Suffolk counties. Tell the people who are listening who are not exactly sure what this bill is and what it's about. Give us the nuts and bolts of what this bill is supposed to do, or what they think it's supposed to do versus what it really does.
Okay, so it's not news to any of the listeners on Long Island that there's a long-term concern about the single-source drinking water supply that you guys use, to live. And historically, there's been a lot of issues, particularly on the east end of Long Island, with contamination of these water bodies. And, you know, obviously, originally, it was from farming. And that concern started in the late 60s, early 70s. And now, really, I have to tell you, Anthony, this is sort of a modern, urbanized approach to trying to deal with that same problem. In spite of the fact that 90% of the nitrogen contamination that comes into that groundwater that you guys drink doesn't come from these kinds of fertilizers that this recent bill is targeting at the state level, they're obviously, lawns and golf courses are easy targets. They look green, so people think, well, they must be throwing all kinds of things on there. And this is a real case where perception is misleading. Grass is green up without any fertilizer in the springtime, and oftentimes stay green throughout the years. If a grass area gets established for more than a decade, it's probably got a fair amount of nutrients in there. So, you know, I'm a little concerned with the sort of short-sightedness of this legislation, but as I indicated, the intent is noble to keep the groundwater safe. It just doesn't appear that the approach that they're taking up at the State House, just for Long Island now, but they're going to look at it to see if it's something they want to impose across the entire state.
So just to be clear about what the bill is supposed to do, it's supposed to restrict the sale and use of high nitrogen water soluble fertilizers. So first of all, what does that mean, restricting? Does that mean they're going to try to reduce the content of nitrogen in the fertilizers, or are they just going to reduce the sale itself?
This is the deepest dive you guys have ever done on a topic. I have to believe. There's no way you dive this deep in Lydia Ko's golf school, I must say.
Hey, you don't know what we talk.
You're exactly right.
You don't know
exactly
what we talk right about off the air, Frank. So we just keep that between us.
Yes, everything you said is correct. They are trying to limit what is called what they've referred to as high nitrogen fertilizer, which they're listing at 12%, and half of that nitrogen in the 12% has to be a slow release nitrogen. And you know, this really just doesn't make sense for what they're trying to accomplish. If you don't restrict an overall load, like we've already been through on the east end of Long Island, this is the thing that's most perplexing to me, Anthony. We've already been through this with the Long Island community on the east end, came to a resolution, won a regional EPA award for the two dozen golf courses and DEC and USGA and Cornell researchers that were involved. And instead of paying attention to the work we've already done out there, they've just decided to make this rule if restricting the percentage and solubility of the N. So any homeowner who thinks, well, I used to buy 25%. Now I got 12. I got to buy two bags now.
Right.
So that's the thing that concerns me. It's not addressing what all the professionals believe is reasonable to discuss. What's the amount of nitrogen I use on my golf course, and then work it from there instead of saying, okay, no more soup for you. And then you figure out, you know, how to work back from that. And the thing that concerns me when I read this bill is it's got the same perceptions and, quote, limiting excessive nitrogen, which serves primarily to make grass look greener, represents a common sense approach to limiting HABs. That's just very, it's just ill-advised. As a scientist, it just doesn't make any sense when they characterize it like that. We need nitrogen on some of these lawns to make sure that they're dense. When they're dense, less stuff gets into the water. They're really putting, in many cases, potentially the environment at greater risk by restricting it like this, rather than having a broader discussion with the people who know something about this to get to the same end.
So we're talking today with Dr. Frank Rossi, Associate Professor at Cornell University, Extension Turf Grass Specialist. And, of course, one of our topics today is we're talking about a bill being proposed that will affect the use of fertilizers on Long Island. So, Frank, you brought up golf courses, and obviously it's on par with Anthony Scorsia, so we're talking about golf here. So how is this going to impact how golf courses maintain their property? And, of course, obviously they have to maintain their grass and make sure that it's sustainable throughout a season.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, let's be clear. I don't have any information that this bill has passed completely and has been promulgated. I have nothing in my thing here that says this is a done deal. But if it becomes a done deal, the golf courses on Long Island will have to make some adjustments in the way they feed. But because it doesn't restrict the amount, they're just going to wind up having to use a collection of different products, and it's likely to cost more. It's likely to be a larger labor burden. But more importantly, Anthony, I mean, it's just not going to accomplish what these people want to do. And I can't listen. I'm on the left side of the aisle on these issues. I think we should, you know, I have a different approach. But this is just so misguided in creating some bureaucracy that's not enforceable. It's very difficult to enforce this stuff. And
right.
They're going to do it by enforcing it at point of sale. So that's going to be tricky. And then, you know, ultimately it's not accomplishing what these people want to do. So I'm just, you know, it's a bit frustrating all around. I'm fairly sure with the quality of golf course superintendents you have on Long Island, some of the best in the world, they're going to figure out how to provide that golf course for their players. But it's going to be quite a bit more challenging and, unfortunately, not accomplishing the goals that I think everybody wants, including the golf guys. They live on Long Island. They don't want to drink water that's contaminated. Where's the sense in that? So
right.
I'm sort of, this has been a real sort of constant agitation from political activists on Long Island that really are ill-guided.
Yeah, I can understand your frustration. It's the political climate is very difficult out there at the moment. But I want to there's more to discuss about this. But I want to get to our next break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
At Winfield United, we understand the challenges you face and the goals you have. We promise to do our best and to help you do yours. With the introduction of tools like the Geotech Insight platform and products like Droplex Extra, we are advancing the industry to new levels, allowing you to manage your time and budget more efficiently. Visit WinfieldUnitedPro.com to find a representative near you today. Winfield United, a proud sponsor of the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill-level golfers, from our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. Across from me is Steve. Behind the glass is Trevor, and on the line is PhD professor from Cornell University, Frank Rossi. Frank, I want to, you know, you said you were a little perplexed by this. I'm just curious, why now? Why this bill? Why now? Is it cover fire for something else? I mean, it seems like an odd time and an odd choice to be a bullet point.
Well, so, Anthony, that's a very interesting thing. It doesn't seem odd to me at all. This
okay.
is exactly what they tried to do, but likely the same groups. I don't get involved in sort of the muck and mire of the politics on Long Island, but a group attempted to do this last year through the Long Island Nitrogen Action Plan that's already underway, and the discussion occurred, and the existing Long Island Nitrogen Action Plan that the industries are actively working on was not considered when this state rule was being promulgated. So some of it is odd in the sense that, well, wait a minute, I thought we put this to bed, and now it's coming up at the state level. The other issue is, Anthony, this is the time of year when the homeowners are running out there. We've built an entire lawn care industry around people who go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace Hardware, get their fertilizer and run around their lawn. And I think what needs to be done is a broader discussion about the homeowner use of a lot of these products, or even the landscape professionals' use of these products. Wherever you're applying these products with a lot of paved surface, that gets everybody concerned. That's what the landscapers have to do. That's what the lawn care people have to do. The timing seems right because this is probably when most of the fertilizer actually gets sold for the majority of the lawns on Long Island.
Now, Frank, you said before, and rightfully so, that this is not the primary reason why there's nitrogen in the water supply. It's basically sewage or wastewater. So I think my question ultimately is let's just be as optimistic as we can, pie in the sky, whatever you want. So supposing that we do end up reducing the amount of nitrogen in fertilizer, is that really going to make an impact with regard to the pollution of our water supply?
It's enormously unlikely. And in fact, if it goes through and people look at this as a way of not fertilizing, there's the possibility that many of these urban grasslands, these lawns and large expanse areas, won't have as much vegetation on them, and then the resulting effect could be increased runoff, and that would lead to a reduction in water quality. So this law could in fact have the opposite effect of what it's trying to accomplish. And where fertilizers have been restricted in the past, mostly for phosphorus, in, you know, throughout New York State, much of the Northeast now, Minnesota, Wisconsin, they've looked a decade now after these bans have put into place, and they've seen no measurable reduction, no measurable improvement in water quality in these areas where fertilizers have been banned for a decade.
So, to be clear, we have a possible bill or proposal or possible bill being passed that will restrict the use of fertilizer, maybe increase the budget of a golf course, and have no effect. It sounds like a government operation to me. So, my question is, what do you want us to do? What can we do? What can people on Long Island do to help with this situation for golf courses?
Well, obviously, the immediate thing to do is to reach out to the legislators that are responsible for bill number A10276, sponsored by Engelbreit. I would say if there are listeners to the program that believe this is something, after hearing me and maybe referring to a little more research about this, if they reach out to these people, obviously these people are listening. The politicians are, you know, they're implements of, you know, public policy. If the public is bantering for this, they're going to do it. If the public reaches out, see, I would tell people to say this, Anthony, what the heck are you passing this bill for? We've got a Long Island Nitrogen Action Plan committee having a discussion about the serious concerns that we have about water quality on Long Island, trying to figure out with the people who live down there, with the people who are doing this work. What's the best solution so that we have something we can all, maybe are not entirely comfortable with, but we can live with and we think is likely to have some measurable impact? And that's the biggest part of this. They need to reach out to those people and say, listen, we're already working on this. We don't need a bill to further complicate this issue. And I think that's probably the most important thing anybody can do, if reaching out to try to deal with this.
I want to transition to, you wrote the BMPs, the best management practices for New York, for New York golf courses and golf course superintendents. And when we talk about the best practices, I would have to say that, or I would imagine that they're probably using all the best practices they can, given the winter that we had. What kind of challenges are golf course superintendents across the Northeast faced with, as Steve said earlier, this supposedly spring has started?
Okay, let me help you transition from the water quality thing to, you know, the how few playable hours of golf we have had this spring.
A smooth transition at that.
Right. So the New York, this is the part of where my particular frustration emanates from. And what I got to believe is really frustrating for my brother and sister golf course superintendents on Long Island is that, you know, we raised a fair amount of money to get these things done, which codify the standards that we operate golf courses on to protect water quality. And I have to say, of the 800-some-odd golf courses we have in New York State, the Long Island golf course superintendents absolutely were at the table leading this effort with those in the Metropolitan New York Golf Course Superintendents Association. So, you know, these guys have put their money where their mouth is. They said, listen, we're willing to be held to a higher standard, and if as following those standards, they're doing more than this bill would ever do. So let's put this to bed. These guys have got science-based recommendations that they're implementing that can easily do more to solve this problem than this bill will ever do. Now, transitioning to what these guys are trying to do to get these places in shape for play, and on Long Island, you know, you're jutted out into that Atlantic Ocean that's like a permanent air conditioner in the springtime to slow things from getting going. If you look at the data, Anthony, it's very clear. You've got about, look at models about how we play golf, playable hours, the amount of time that a person would actually go out and play golf when it's not raining, when it's not too cold, when it's not too windy, are down between 5 and 10%. So, first of all, no one wants to go out and play. For those that do go out and play, the golf courses are just very slow because we're 2 to 3 weeks behind normal conditions. When we monitor temperature and things that determine how the golf courses get going, they're just 2 to 3 weeks behind. So while it feels like the end of April, it's more like the end of March. And I think that's hard for most people to understand, especially when we're inundated with global warming and how much the planet's getting warmer, and we can't seem to snap out of this cold spell. I would say I've seen the most collection of frustrated golfers and golf course superintendents this spring than I've ever seen.
Well, you could count me as one of those people because, you know, I still haven't even taken the clubs out of my trunk yet because I can't, you know, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to put on four layers of clothes just to swing a club around, because to me that's just not fun. So the question is, we're a month behind in the maintenance schedule. So what's going to happen when the weather finally gets warm? Let's just say next week when they're predicting it's going to be 70s. Now everybody's going to want to go out there and play golf. So now a golf course goes from not being played at all to being overplayed, and that obviously has to be a huge burden on the superintendents as well.
Well, I don't think any golf course anywhere is ever going to complain about being overplayed in the golf market world we live in today. But yes, it's going to get a lot of foot traffic, and that is foot traffic and car traffic, and that's the primary stress that these guys have to deal with. And to tie in with our previous discussion, Anthony, this is the fundamental reason why they use nitrogen. They use nitrogen not to keep the grass green, to keep up with the traffic stress. You know, I do my work at the Bethpage State Park, and they're cranking 30,000 people, 35,000 rounds, 40,000 rounds, 50,000 rounds through some of those blue, green, and yellow courses. They need nitrogen just to keep up with the play. And furthermore, that nitrogen has to be soluble, because insoluble nitrogen will not be available to the plants to recover from that traffic. So it's a very interesting intersection between the slow spring, the rampant traffic we're going to have, and this bill that's going to restrict nitrogen, that's an important tool for golf superintendents to keep up with the traffic.
It seems to me like that nitrogen is sort of a little bit of the Wheaties for the grass, if I'm understanding you correctly, to help with it, to give it a little strength.
So I'm just assuming you didn't do well in chemistry classes in high school, Anthony. Is that a fair assumption?
That's a fair assessment okay. of your understanding of the situation.
I don't know how you figured that out so easily, Frank. That was you should be a detective, Frank. You really should.
So yes, nitrogen is the nutrient that drives growth. If you really wanted to turn your grass greener, most of the people would probably spray it with iron. Because iron puts a little dark tinge to the grass and makes it look greener. So I think it's somewhat important to distinguish what we're using these nutrients for, and it's not for looks. That's the common misperception. Most of these golf courses are doing it for the traffic that they're receiving. And, of course, some of that traffic is the maintenance equipment.
Right.
And one more thing about the slow spring. As it starts to surge and warm up, you know, golf course superintendents are using data like every other profession in the world. We have data-driven things we do regarding soil temperature, growing degree days, when the forsythia pops. And if the temperature surges all at once, the work that they would normally spread out over a 6 to 7 week period, it's got to get done in 10 days. Same with the landscapers. A lot of this industry is going to have a very compressed work schedule. And that's going to be complicated by everybody coming out to play golf.
Frank, thank you for your time this morning. You are a river unto your people, my friend. I hope that
hopefully a non-polluted river.
A non-polluted river, correct, correct. Now, congratulations on all your accolades. I mean, well-deserved. Steward of the land. I mean, that's just a tremendous honor. I mean, the closest thing I've ever been to a steward is I was a bar back in a bar once, and that's about it. So, Frank, God bless, and thanks a lot for everything. We really appreciate your time, your effort, and everything that you're doing for golf courses, especially for the superintendents on Long Island.
Thanks very much for the invitation, Anthony. Always happy to have a chat with you guys. And whenever you want to learn more about the difference between nitrogen and Wheaties, you give me a call. Huh?
All right, you got it. You're my first call, my friend.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
Thanks, Frank.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. All right, that was Frank Rossi, PhD from Cornell University, helping us out.
I never get tired of listening to Frank.
No, he's good. He's good. And I was just happy to serve that up for him.
Yes, that was good. You know, you are the perfect foil here. So.
Exactly.
So that's
exactly
what happens. But, hey, look, you know, basically, I guess what he's saying is Long Island golf course superintendents have their work cut out for them. That's for sure.
And quite frankly, I'm not sure that that's never been the case. I mean, I think golf course superintendents always had their work cut out for them, because they're dealing with either an uneducated public, or they're dealing with very demanding members, or they're or both.
And now they have this.
Exactly. So I just think I've always, I love all my sponsors. There's no question about it. But I think my the most interesting and most fun partnership that I've had has been the Long Island Golf Course Superintendent Association, and that's been just because I've learned so much from what they do, and they are a bit of the unsung heroes of our profession, or our recreational sport, and what they do is tremendous, and they're put under a lot of pressure, and there's not a lot of, and they don't have a very large voice.
Well, sure, because you know when you show up to a golf course, you basically take for granted. I expect, you know, smooth fairways, I expect smooth greens, and I expect a course to be in good shape. But how that course gets into shape, well, that's not my problem.
Exactly. All right, that's all for this week, my friends. Thank you for joining us. Always to have the pleasure of your company. We'll be back next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsese.